Well, ladies and gentlemen, we've got our next guest, so I'm going to stop right there and bring on Mr. Palast. Good evening, sir. Welcome.
Glad to be with you.
We want to thank you so much for bringing your voice. You're doing so much good to get the real news out despite the corporate filters that are all over the place. Greg, want to welcome
you.
And I'd like to ask you just a couple personal questions, and then I'd like you to give us your take on what we need to know right now about either the BP breakout or anything else you'd like to tell us about. I want to ask you just a couple quick questions. Number one, you know, reading your first chapter, I learned that, you studied economics, that it was a very your father's work in furniture retail had a strong impact on you. I was wondering, one of the questions I asked all my guests is, what took them from being just another consumer, you know, an appropriate shill for the corporate leaders of this country? What turned you into a person that had to make a difference? Could you speak to that?
Yeah, I mean, in the first chapter, Vulture's Picnic, I talk about that. It's pure resentment against, you know, I just saw these rich kids who had it made. I mean, I'm just a little bit younger than George Bush, of all things. You know, my daddy couldn't make a call to get me out of the war in Vietnam. I got out, I lucked out on the lottery, on the death lottery, but, you know, and I, calls couldn't be made. If I got drunk, I wasn't going to get into Yale, et cetera, and good grades, and I didn't get in anyway, even with the top grades. So I was filled with resentment and hatred of the rich, something I thankfully have never overcome. And those who have special privileges in America and abuse them at our expense. And, you know, I have to tell you, and I'm not partisan about this, by the way. I don't care. You know, Romney, Obama, they all have their problems. But when I just, it just reminded me, though, your question. When a kid, a high school kid, asked Mitt Romney, you know, I'm really worried about the cost of going to college. And Romney said to him, well, hey, you know, just go to a lesser school that's a little bit cheaper, that's good enough. And then he added, and don't expect the U.S. government to pay for it. This is a kid, this is a guy whose daddy paid for him to go to the fanciest private school in Michigan, whose daddy owned a car company, got him into and paid for Harvard. And do you think that he'd be at Bain Capital if he went to Ohio State? No, I don't think so. And because, you know, let's face it, whatever you might say, I mean, you know, I don't have a problem with Romney per se, but he's not the sharpest knife in the drawer. Either was Bush. You know, I mean, these guys didn't make it on their own steam. If it weren't all the, you know, if his name were Mitt Smith instead of Romney, you know, he'd be maybe a, you know, a junior manager at a car wash right now. And you know it, and I know it. The thing is, he doesn't know it, and that's evil. And so, I've had it with these guys.
Let me ask another question about your formative years. Was it a fortuitous accident that you studied economics and then were able to use that so powerfully in your investigative reporting, or did you have in mind to do that? Was that a premeditation, or was that just interesting synchronicity?
No, it was no. I was actually undercover when anyone, by the way, get that first chapter, vulturespicnic.org, vulturespicnic.org.
An excellent read. Excellent.
First chapter. But if you get through the rest, you'll find that at the University of Chicago, I actually studied under Milton Friedman, of all people.
Right.
And, but I was sent there to study under him by the labor unions of Chicago, the left-wing labor unions, the big industrial unions like steel workers, auto workers, meat packers. When we had steel workers and auto workers and meat packers in Illinois, and they wanted me to get inside and find out what Friedman and these Chicago characters were up to. So that's why I was there. What pushed me to do it. Yeah.
It's obviously been excellent so that you could trace these multi-billion-dollar deals. It's been tremendous. So tell me, the work that you're doing right now, I mean, obviously your books show the whole range. I mean, you're truly a global investigator. What's the latest news, sir? What can you tell us?
Well, if you go to gregpalast.com, and a lot of this, by the way, is in Vulture's Picnic, but you go to gregpalast.com, you'll see a story about that that before the Deepwater Horizon blowout, there was a prior blowout on a BP rig in the Caspian Sea, and BP covered it up. That is, and it blew out for the same reason. They used this cheap cement, what's called quick dry cement laced with nitrogen, which is not much used now because of the deep water horizon. But they knew that, that this stuff could fail because it failed in the Caspian Sea 2 years earlier, and they covered it up. And so, and my story is about that cover up. I flew, when I got the tip about this blowout after the deep water horizon, I flew to the Caspian Sea to the nation of Azerbaijan. And there I was actually arrested while investigating BP, looking for witnesses. I found them, but they disappeared before I could film them. But I still got the evidence, because then later when I went through the WikiLeaks cables, I found out that our U.S. State Department had all the information from a secret meeting with the head of British Petroleum, Azerbaijan. And who said, yeah, we had this blowout and there was cement all over. And the reason why the State Department knew is that Chevron and Exxon were not getting their, you know, their monthly royalty checks, because they owned a piece of that big platform in the Caspian Sea. And they were screaming. So they got their explanation, but everyone kept silent. BP kept silent, Chevron, Exxon, and the U.S. State Department, and the government of Azerbaijan. I've never heard of Azerbaijan. It's this Caspian Sea oil dictatorship. And basically was put in power, one of these nations that was created out of the Soviet Union.
Right.
Put in power by BP. And the government was put in power through a coup d'etat armed by BP, MI6, CIA. And this is, by the way, MI6 agents gave me this information. And they gave BP an exclusive drilling contract. So those guys were pretty well greased and taken care of. And, you know, so BP withheld all this. And if they hadn't, if BP hadn't withheld this, those 11 guys would be alive on that rig today.
Let me ask you this. You know, we find ourselves with a non-responsive government, a government that doesn't notice millions of people in the streets protesting a war, a government that blinks and said, oh, everything's fine because BP said it's fine. After all, BP said nothing's leaking. These people didn't have an interest in prosecuting war criminals. Do you think there's much chance, do you think there's any chance that we can get them to prosecute BP for these lies?
Well, there is a minor chance. You asked me if there's a chance. A likelihood, that's a different matter. I think that the government is going to take so far there's an indication that the U.S. Justice Department is going to take some low-level people at BP and charge them with criminal concealment. But not of a big concealment, which was the BP blowout in the Caspian, and that was the very top guys were involved in that, including the paying of bribes, including the chairman of the board at the time, Lord Brown. These top guys knew all about the Caspian Sea blowout, and they hid it. That's a criminal act. I know that because I worked on criminal and racketeering investigations before I was an investigative reporter, and this is the type of stuff where we would, you know, arrest people for criminal concealment. It is, and also BP did tell the Securities Exchange Commission that they evacuated the rig in the Caspian, but they lied about the reason. They didn't say there was a blowout. So they lied to the Securities Exchange Commission, which is, you know, when you lie to stockholders, that's big. They lie to everyone else, doesn't matter. But that's a crime. So will the Obama administration take this on? I don't know. I do know that I'm working with Bobby Kennedy, who is professor of law, dean of environmental law at Pace University Law School. And he said, this is a crime. We're going to be sending a note, a message and a petition to Eric Holder, attorney general. And now when Kennedy sends a petition to the Justice Department, because his own father had been attorney general, they read it. So they won't have any excuse that they won't know the information. What I want to make sure is that once they have this, we will then see whether they act on it. Am I holding my breath? No, that'd be dangerous.
Let me ask you one other related question. Viewing in mind the number of whistleblowers that are being prosecuted right now by this once thought to be open government, do you see this as a dark shadow for investigative reporting in this country?
Terrible. Well, let's put it this way. I mean, in the end, the proof that there was a hidden, that there was a hidden blowout, and that this information could have saved lives. We only know that because of Private Bradley Manning, who released the so-called WikiLeaks cables. And he's in solitary confinement probably the rest of his life. Daniel Ellsberg was released because at the time they said, well, we don't have enough. Judge Sporkin, in that case, is America, does not have an Official Secrets Act. If someone is not giving away secrets to the enemy but is publicizing wrongdoing, you can't put Daniel Ellsberg in jail for the Pentagon Papers. This is no different. This guy was releasing information of official misconduct. And again, in the case of Azerbaijan, we see it. In fact, he had information that could have saved lives if we would have acted on it. I am stunned and disappointed and horrified that the Obama administration, headed, as he points out, by a professor of constitutional law from my own school, would say that that a truth teller can be put in jail for the rest of his life. We have we have whistleblower protection laws, False Claims Act laws. Manning should not only not be in jail, he should be given substantial payment under Abraham Lincoln's False Claims Act because of his release of this vital information. I am horrified that the Pope of Hope has decided to act in a way that I think would shame George Bush or Dick Cheney.
I can't thank you enough, Mr. Palast, for joining us. If I can trouble you for one more question, one of our regular supporters has called in and has asked to ask you a question. Lisa, go ahead.
Oh, hi, Rick. Thanks. Mr. Palast, it's such a pleasure to speak with you. I've been a fan for a while. I'm glad you're nonpartisan. We are, too. The truth is like that, right? A few questions.
You have to be.
Yeah, you have to be. You can't be knee-jerk liberal or Republican. I'm concerned, of course, about the Deepwater Horizon. We're on the second anniversary now. I'm calling you from the Panhandle. I will not eat Gulf seafood, and I'm not alone. Why hasn't the blight of the fish getting more attention? I thought that Obama was not going to open drilling until the Woods Hole people and all the other scientists had done their impact studies to show the impact on the Gulf seafood.
Yes, I'm very disappointed. I join you in that concern. And I have to say that I spent a lot of time with the former chairman of the biology department at the University of Alaska, Rick Steiner. Mm-hmm. Steiner, because he's in Alaska, has studied the effect on fishing of oil spills. In fact, it hit him pretty hard because he, like a lot of even though he's a professor of biology, he also owned a commercial fishing boat in Alaska and went bankrupt after the Exxon Valdez spill. Mm-hmm. He is saying that the science is still showing that there's a tremendous amount of toxicity and problems among among seafood and in the food chain right now in the Gulf of Mexico. And the problem is that our government is not credible on this. We have to rely on the government to say that they are testing the fish, we are seeing deformities in the brown shrimp population. We are seeing tremendous problems, and these problems I know from Alaska continue for years and years. It would be an extraordinary biological miracle if somehow the fish were that was safe to feed, to eat those fish, mm-hmm. especially shrimp, within 2 years. Shrimp are filter eaters, mm-hmm. and filter eaters are concentrate eaters. So if there's a toxin, they concentrate it in their body. So the last thing I really want to do, the last thing is harm the seafood industry there. I've people But you know what? I haven't met one of the seafood processors yet who is saying that they want to go out on a limb and say, please eat this stuff, no matter the effect on them. They care about people. These are really good people. And I think that it is all about the kind of drill, baby, drill panic that's going on in the administration and in the Republican Party. You have the fanatics, and in the administration you have the fearful. And the fanatics and the fearful have gotten together and decided that they're going to sell you poisoned seafood and keep drilling. I think, you know, it's almost, you know, we almost are working without a functioning government right now in terms of regulation of food safety. It's one of the few things we ask of government. And I think that we're being let down. I'm really glad you brought this up. I think that that's, you know, it's, you know, I got to go on because I'm still editing a new piece. If you go to gregpalace.com tomorrow, you'll see a new film on my, what happened in the Caspian Sea, my arrest. And also, I'll be breaking a story tomorrow, I'll give it to you, on the massive bribery, the massive amount of payments made by BP to secure silence control of the Caspian Sea. And the complicity, of course, of Exxon, Chevron, all these guys work together. And so, you know, if you go to gregpalace.com, you'll see the follow-up material and the films.
Good. Can I ask one very quick follow-on question?
Very
you mentioned quick. That you mentioned that with BP, we're going to see a lot of low-level people thrown under the bus. Why is it that the American people, do you think, are so content with people like Lynn England after Abu Ghraib being prosecuted? Why are we happy when the lowly ones are thrown under the bus rather than the people who matter?
Well, you know, it's the old sacrificial lamb. You got to throw the virgin in the volcano. You don't throw the hooker into the volcano. Not that I want anyone to go in the volcano.
You may try to rip her off.
Yeah, right. So it's always the innocent or the small fry. Some of the small fry, after all, are taking orders. There's no small-level person at BP said, let's blow up the rig, that's going to take a chance. They're acting under pressure from the upper echelons. And that, yeah, of course, it is shameful. Shameful. And that's why Kennedy and I are going straight to Holder, because we can actually contact the Attorney General personally. And I want the Attorney General personally to say yes or no on prosecuting the big fish if I give him the material. And understand, I've done racketeering cases for the government. I'm not an amateur at this. I know what evidence should put people in jail, and we've got plenty.
Well, thank you so much.
More power to you.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Mr.
Good
Blast.
Good luck with all.
Thanks
You're
for joining
well.
Us.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And thank you, Lisa.
Bye-bye, Rick. Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.